Number 24A.
We take again our diagram, this one, and as you have realized, I have left out really the part of Christianity from the point of view of truth, which had all to do with truth resolving error. The text there is very easy, and reading the text in the Bible, and then with the help perhaps of the epitomes, I think the text is very clear. But we wanted to know what does the Christian Science textbook say in regard to the question of truth resolving error, and so I built a bridge over to the textbook and showed how the textbook and how Christian Science is dealing with that subject. So having done that, we can go on to the point of view of love in that third part. And we know that that third part doesn't deal anymore, or doesn't have to deal anymore, with the question of error, because once the question of error is dealt with, there is only one thing left, namely the oneness of being. So this is a very logical sequence, and so we are looking at the oneness of being. But before I do that, I want to show you how in our time that development took place from the standpoint of truth to the standpoint of love. And I want to show you that in regard to the development within John Dorley's consciousness. And in order to show what? In order to show that from the standpoint of truth, really in the focal point we have really the healing part, that part of how truth handles error, whereas now in the second part, from the standpoint of love, we see no more how truth handles error. The prince of this world is cast out at the point of truth, so at the point of love he doesn't enter anymore, he can't enter anymore, and we have that realm of ideas that is showing just the oneness of being. Now, this is a development that John, the gospel writer, shows, and I also want to show how this development from having the accent on healing, going on to having the accent on understanding the science of being, has developed in the life of John Dorley. I have taken all the available association reports that we have, and that goes way back to the year 1930. And so I just want to show you quickly, only quickly, and you don't have to make notes or take notes of the years and so that passed since then, but to show you that a similar development has taken place quite naturally without that John Dorley was aware of it, because he just followed really the impact of the of life, truth and love to bring about a new development. So when one goes over those association reports, one and that go back to 1930, one sees that still in 1930, much more even before that time, that in those 2 years, 30, 31 and 32, actually there are 3 years, that in those association reports, the accent lies on Christian Science practice. It lies on healing, of handling really evil, and showing how to handle the world problem. So the accent was typically on physical healing and healing. Then 1933-34, in those 2 years, one begins to see that he changed the focus and that he began to put the accent, therefore, on truth and show rather the preventive practice of Christian Science, the prophylactic healing or art of Christian Science, rather than really the healing aspect of Christian Science. And he began to show that through the days of creation. Then, again, 1935, we have again a change away, so to say, from putting the accent on physical healing. He put the accent really then on spiritual healing through the order. Now order comes in and he begins to show that we have really to practice with the consciousness of order, with an order consciousness. And so he gave the practice based on the 7 days of creation and on the third degree in the translation of mortal mind. So we can see a step forward, healing through already through order. Then in 1936, again, there was a marked a change in his association. Then he began to show that Christian Science is an exact science. So science came into the forefront of his teaching, and there is hardly any mention there about healing, hardly any hints about healing. Now he's interested in the exact science of Christian Science, in the days. He teaches the days, the numerals, then the calculus, then the synonymous terms, then those Bible sequences, the sequences of the days, and the commandments, and the Beatitudes, and the Lord's Prayer. That was at the center of his teaching. So again came, so to say, the great turning point, so to say, the watershed, as you call it in English, in 1938. And that was really the turning point where he now put so much stress on science and understanding now. The whole association was full of showing that there is a science, but that science must be understood. And he already gave at that time those three orders of the synonymous terms, and showing really that mind heals through the seven synonymous terms. So you can see year after year, the trend was away from putting the focus on physical healing and constantly going forward in showing that actually it is a science that is necessary. Then, during 39 to 44, it was very marked that he practically only talked about science and system. He brought out that science has a system and what that system is. He talked about the system in the Bible a little bit, then a system in the textbooks and the platform and recapitulation, and showing that the system is in Christ and Christmas. Then he began to show the four cardinal points of the Holy City, then the three levels of science: Christian Science, absolute Christian Science, and divine science. He began to talk about the categories and about the calculus. Therefore then the great stress: think out from science. And you see a wonderful development that came quite naturally. Then at that point he was excommunicated from the church because of his teaching, and that was exactly that point where Mrs. Eddy says, well, class teaching will be obsolete the moment really it has accomplished its purpose, namely to show really the higher meaning of the scriptures. I quoted that at the beginning of this week, and that was exactly the point where he took up in 1945 up to the point of 1950 when he left us. His whole engagement was really then to show the science of the Bible. So I gave, on the basis of what he has seen as the science, he gave the science that was underlying the Bible. And there it was then hardly any special subject on healing, on physical healing. He much more rested on that point that Christian Science is the elucidation of the divine principle through the higher meaning of the scriptures. Then only in the last moment before he left us, he gave then again that he gave us healing through the chapter on Christian Science practice, which you know as a book also, where he began to show that the healing must be based on a science. that, and showed that through the chapter, which he laid out in a very wonderful, systematic way. Just one wonderful structure of showing that actually practice is showing in four parts, namely love from the point of view of love and mind, then second, truth as mind, then third as life and soul, and then the fourth part taking together life, truth and love as spirit. And so he raised, so to say, the whole question of practice up to the point of life, truth and love, and showed that life, truth and love operates really through mind, soul and spirit. That's the order we have in the Christianity order. Naturally, that chapter on Christian Science practice is actually Christianity as science. So we see here that there is in being always the same at work, the same order at work, no matter if we look over it in thousands of years or just in the span of a human life, that if one is pure to the idea, that idea has an order and leads us in an ordered way of understanding. So that when we now take really that part on Christianity, which we take now from the point of view of love, where John is showing us in the Last Supper really his teaching, which is, so to say, the highest teaching the Bible gives here, that we can see that he's interested in showing us that we must be led by the way of understanding, that brings us into oneness of being. So he does no more recount any healing or any physical experience in the physical through spiritual means, but only rest in the spiritual idea in order to show the consistency of one being, as one web of consistency, as Mrs. Eddy would also show, that the categories of being are interwoven, and when they are understood, they form really the oneness of being, of the Infinite One. So that gives us the bridge over again back to see that also John was seeing that, and that he began to teach that way. So we go back to our epitomes in the diagram, where we had the underlined epitome, which means that is the pith of the whole matrix there, and shows the oneness of the Infinite One. That's our underlined epitome. Now, this is a wonderful statement, the oneness of the Infinite One, but that statement you can have in any higher religion. You can go even back to the East and to Eastern philosophy. They also will say that there is a oneness in being, that the oneness is the Infinite One, and therefore you have the Nirvana, where you enter into that Infinite One and are one with the Infinite One. Wonderful. But it doesn't show the science of it. That's the point. Whereas Christianity goes forward and says, all right, now, this is a true statement, that oneness of the Infinite One, but now I must show you what is the scientific content of that Infinite One, or we have just the Nirvana, which is an undifferentiated one. So Christianity goes further. Christianity came about 500, 600 after the Eastern philosophy, and brought now in the scientific aspect of the Infinite One. How is that Infinite One being depicted through the Bible, and how can we explain it through the Christian Science textbook? So the very first subtitle here, or sub-epitome we have seen, is that we start out with the Word, which is the oneness of Word, Christ, Christianity. So that we have to see that oneness is not just a oneness with a one, but that it is a oneness with the four. That is, that we must be one with the four-sided city. So we begin really to square the circle and see an explanation of that circle, of that one, and can therefore interpret that one in an intelligent way. Now, even this sub-epitome, oneness of word, Christ, Christianity, does not yet show very much. It shows a little bit more than just the underlined epitome, but the text goes on and shows that sense of oneness with word, Christ, Christianity, and science through four steps. So we have there in the empty boxes, so to say, we have a statement of that oneness from the point of view of word, and then Christ and Christianity and science. Now, how does it... are you with me? Yeah? Where I am? Yes. So let's see quickly what the Bible says and how we can interpret it. And we'll see that it gives a logical development of that being one with the word and the Christ, the Christianity. Namely, the very first sub-sub-tone now, for which we have no epitome in the diagram, but you have the epitome for that in the epitome book, is showing something wonderful. He starts out with that pleasing sense where he says, "Let not your heart be troubled." So as if he would say, now you have done with the prince of this world, he has been cast out, so there is no more any occasion for trouble. You know that there is no error, you know that error is nothing, and you have understood why it is nothing, so there is no more any occasion to be troubled in your heart. But that is not enough. He says, in my Father's house are many mansions. And we have seen that we can say the Father's house, a house in the Bible, was always consciousness. So the consciousness of God has many consciousnesses, has many mentions, indicating that each individual really has a place within that oneness, that each one has a specific place within the infinite one, so that each one individually is one with the individual, with the infinite one. But not only that, you see, he says, and I go and prepare a place for you. He said, I'm going to show you what your individual place is. I don't leave you in the dark what that place is, so that you find your place and know where you are, that you know what your individuality is, that it is unique, that it is has no competition nor competitor. It's absolutely unique. So he says, I go to prepare a place for you. I go and show you that you can have your own individual place in this oneness. And saying, I am the way and the truth and the life. So he shows the way of understanding and says, you know, there is a way to life and truth. And he goes on and says, and you know the way. And they didn't quite know it, but he says, you know the way. And he said, well, if you have seen me, you know the way. I am the way. So as to say, his whole life, at the point of St. John, that he would say, if you have followed really the way of understanding right from the first verse up to now, then you know the way. You can't say anymore you don't know the way, because that is the way. You don't have to look for another way, but that way of understanding that leads you from the Word to the Christ to Christianity through the many, many subtones, and then you know the way. And so he says, and no man cometh in to the Father but by me. He makes it exclusive, so that he would say, and that is important for us to see, there are not many ways really to come to the Father. He said there is only one way, namely the calculus. That's the only way, the way of Word, Christ, Christianity. Only through that way you come to science. And there is no other way. And that is why John Dolly was so hot in the last year when he was teaching that. He said, don't leave science and health. Stick to the Bible and stick to science and health. Don't get away from that. That's the way. If you go away from that, you will hurt your nose and you will fall on your face. So it gives a terrific sense what Mrs. Eddy also says. Take the science and health, take that as your leader, take that as the way of understanding. There it is, and this is the way. And no man cometh to the Father but by me. But through me, he meant through the way he is showing, because he said, I am the way. I am the way of understanding. I'm not a Jesus, I'm not a person. Actually, what is my Christ selfhood is a way of understanding. This is so beautiful that John really shows that the Christ is really a way of understanding, and that he doesn't put Jesus into the center, but puts really the way of understanding into the center of his message. Yes. So here we have the first indication what to do, namely really to see there is a way, and the way is paved out. It's not hidden. It's not the mysterious way. There is a clear way, namely a scientific way. Then it comes to a second aspect of the Christ, where we see that oneness with God is also, now comes the Christ, a oneness with works. You see, the moment he brings in the Christ activity, it's about about the works of the Christ, the manifestation of the Christ. And so he shows this, that this oneness is also one of works, and not just a way of understanding, but that understanding leads to demonstration, leads to works. So he says, the Father that dwelleth in me, he does the work. Again, what we had seen before already at one point, that he shows it is not we who work the Christ, it's not we who work the Father, it's not we who tell the Father of the Christ what to do. It is accepting in consciousness that it is actually the Father that dwelleth in me, he does the work. And if you believe, he goes on, and if you believe in me, you will do greater works shall ye do. Again, that sense of the Christ, that the works of the Christ are not always the same, that they are not stagnant, that there is a paradigm shift, that the Christ since time immemorial was bringing forth constantly a new aspect of being, and that you will do greater works. And I guess the greatest work that had been done since Jesus was really the revelation of the textbook, that the textbook was the greatest work that came forth after Jesus' work. So it was the impersonalization of Jesus Christ as Christ science that is really the greater work, because each one can go back to the science, to the textbook, and can have an intimate oneness with the textbook and finds therein his oneness with the Word and his oneness with the works. So, and greater works shall ye do. Okay, then we go further and come to a town of Christianity, where we see that this oneness must also be with Christianity. And here we have that great subject, that if we have gone the way of understanding to the Father, and have let ourselves be used by the Christ and to the greater works, be open for a further development, that then he says something which is so comforting, that he now says, then I will send you, each one will have then the Comforter, the Paraclete. So he says, if ye love me, the Father shall give you another Comforter. Here, for the first time, the term Comforter enters in. You see, it took all that way up to the point of love in Christianity to show the Comforter. All the what has gone before was a great preparation within ourselves, a great sorting out things in our consciousness. What is the Word? What is the Christ calculus? Now, what is really Christianity? What is Christianity from the point of view of truth? It is really showing that truth can resolve error. And now, when everything is cleared up, he brings in the Paraclete. And I will show you another Comforter, another Paraclete, another, what Mrs. Eddy said, I will show you divine science, that he may abide with you forever. That's the point. All the other founders of a religion had always somebody who came and went. It was founded either on Abraham with the Jews, it was founded on Mohammed with Islam, it was founded on the person of Jesus in Christianity, but now he sees that it will be founded on an impersonal foundation, namely on science. so that I can abide with you forever. That science hasn't a birth and hasn't a death. It is a statement of the truth that remains forever. Namely, the spirit of truth, and he dwells with you forever, and he shall teach you all things. And he shall teach you all things. We can now see that science, divine science, as Mrs. Eddy calls the Comforter, shall teach you all things. If you really get that science, I mean, through its system and through its category, we really get it forever. And then he says that important point, I will manifest myself to you. He will manifest himself to everybody. If we understand that Comforter, if we understand the science of being, then we are no more dependent on a personal revelator to come and give us a higher revelation. Then the Paraclete will be the revelator to each one of us. I will manifest myself to you, to the individual. So that the individual suddenly now makes that big step to get out from a personal founder and of a religion, that he gets to a science which does not need an organization, which does not need a personal leader, nor a personal hierarchy, nor anything like that. Science can never be organized. That's the nature of a science, that it can never be organized. You cannot organize mathematics, you cannot organize physics, you cannot organize biology. It's impossible. Every science knows no organization. There is nobody in physics that says what physics is. There is nobody in biology that says this and this alone is biology. Everybody has direct access to research and has a direct access to the science of every discipline. And so everybody can be used as a revelator for that. Yes, so that is being over.